This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, welcome to Breaking Bread, the show where we explore food through culture, conversations, and a whole lot of curiosity. Every week on this show, we explore a particular dish, ingredient, or culinary story, and I bring in some food friends and experts to feed our bellies and minds. On today's episode, we are featuring a top chef from his humble beginnings in Liège, Belgium, to opening a restaurant at the tender age of 23, to moving all across the world to Australia, then Southeast Asia, and to writing cookbooks and even appearing on TV shows. He's just about done it all. And in the past two decades, he has found love in Malaysia and now calls Singapore his home, where he's opened his restaurant, Sampier, which just recently opened a KL branch. It's the Chef in Black. It's Chef Emmanuel Strubant. Thanks for coming onto the show today, Chef.
Good morning and thanks for having me.
So let's just start off with your culinary journey. So you started off in your hometown in Belgium.
That's right.
And you worked in a few restaurants there. But what I found really, really surprising was you started a restaurant at 23.
It was a big mistake. You know how we often say that success comes from good decisions? Good decisions come from experience, and experience come from bad decision.
Uh-huh.
That was a bad decision.
Right. Why was it a bad decision?
It was too young. It was very too young. I don't think I had enough experience to understand. Yes, the culinary side was fine, but the restaurant is not only about cooking. It's also about managing people, first of all, customer expectation, suppliers, there's finance, there's marketing. So all those aspects of business, which I didn't really look at, thinking just, you know, it's about peeling carrot and chopping onions. And that was a mistake.
Mm.
The restaurant went actually for almost 20 years after, even after I left.
Okay.
A decent business. We were very lucky. It was very simple food. Belgian-driven, simple salads, pasta, steaks, braised dishes. So it wasn't what we see today with Saint-Pierre. But it was a good experience for me in that sense that if nothing else, you learn how to manage yourself and your team, and you break your teeth here and there. But at the end of the day, you have to make it.
Mm.
But why I say it's a bad experience, that's, and then I would recommend people to go a bit further, to study with people, to take a little bit more experience from others before launching yourself to that kind of adventure where financially it's not always a success. Mm.
So was that why you then moved over to Australia and then Singapore, Malaysia?
One of the things I loved about that job still today is we can travel the world. I mean, everybody loves good food. It doesn't matter if you color of skin or religions or whatever. It's everybody loves food. So that's one of the beautiful things about being a chef. You can travel. I was fortunate to experience US, lived a couple of years there just to see how it was and see how things were there. Came back, couldn't get a visa. It was a bit difficult. And I had a friend who was living in Australia. And I thought, okay, well, why not Australia? Left Belgium with a backpack and a tourist visa and didn't leave for 4 years after that. So stayed 4 years in Australia.
And you worked around in a couple of restaurants.
Sydney, Canberra. Actually, funny enough, because a lot of people think I'm crazy about Canberra, but I actually liked Canberra. And I ended up in Perth, where I basically fell in love with Asian food. You know, it's common then in Australia today, there's a lot of Asian influences in terms of food. But I didn't want to learn Asian food with what we call a second-hand mentality. I wanted to learn Asian food with Asians. So I had a contact, we had a contact, something like this in Malaysia, and ended up in KL in 1997.
Mm. And you came over to KL, and that's where you met your wife, right?
Yes, that was a revelation of my life. That changed everything after that.
But I find it surprising that once you find your wife in Malaysia, then the both of you moved to Singapore. Why was that?
It was interesting. So I've always been into fine dining. That's my background. That's what I love to do. Back in 97 to 99, I was running a restaurant called Carmen's. And it was, I would say, fine dining back to local standards and to back then, certainly 20 years ago. Singapore was not too far from home, but in terms of business, it was an easier place eventually to open a restaurant. Back then also, there was something more important to me was ingredients. And I'll be very honest, it was much easier to access ingredients in Singapore than it was in Malaysia, again, 20 years ago. Today, things have changed a lot, but that was the main reason why I wanted to be free to access any kind of ingredients I wanted. It's like a painter, you know, you're just restricted to a few colors. And back in Singapore, I could basically have the palette I wanted to have to paint what I wanted to paint.
Mm. And you started, what was the motivation behind starting your restaurant in Sampier?
I'm bad at taking orders. I always like to have my own restaurant. It's as I said, that's maybe the reason why I started quite young. I like to do things the way I like to have it done. Again, I made a lot of mistakes on the way, but still in terms of food, in terms of culinary, I think I like certain things done a certain way. And I have a very good chance to have a good background in the sense of I've got what I would call a solid foundation in classical French. So sometimes when you meet people who have a different foundation, it's very distracting from what you want to do. And that's a way for me to maintain what I do without having to take orders from left, right, or center. I still follow my customer advice. I follow my wife's advice. I follow everybody's advice. But I still, at the end of the day, do direct the way I want it to be directed.
And how would you describe your cooking philosophy at Sampier?
It's ingredient driven. It's really that. So we look for one of the best ingredients we can put our hands on, and we build around that ingredient. So it's not the other way around. We normally say, okay, let's do a pasta dish or something. I will go and, I don't know, we take a lobster, for instance. We're going to look for the very best lobster you can find. If we can find a good lobster, let's see what other alternative can we get. We want a live product. We want something which is super fresh. There's seasonability. There is availability, of course. And we, most of the time, we'll build around that flavor profile to see how we can go. So seasons are important. We try to be a little bit creative also, try to think of things out of the box, not following the classics. But however, the classics are still there in terms of techniques.
Mm. And a lot of your techniques are based in classical French or Correct. European cuisine, right?
So I think if you want to learn how to dance modern jazz, for instance, you need to have a very strong techniques in classical dancing. If you want to play rock and roll, it's better if you have a very good technique in classical music. And it's the same with food. I mean, you need to have a very solid foundation. In one other culture, it doesn't have to be French, it can be Chinese, Italian, whatever it is. But if you don't have that solid foundation, very often as you climb, you're going to find yourself a bit short of that base. And I think I would recommend anybody who wants to start this industry to go a little bit in depth in terms of foundation. Take your time, don't go too fast. It's really important to have a very solid base in order to grow fast and high.
Mm, and don't open a restaurant at 23 years old. Yeah, but since your background and good culinary base in French cooking, you've kind of explored around a lot of Asian flavors and Asian ingredients. What drove the fascination with Asian flavors?
It's always been there, I think. I remember my mum cooking Chinese food, or what we would call Chinese food back then.
In Belgium?
Yes.
Wow.
She would do like little meatball and some soup with coriander and something which I've never seen before. Ginger tasted like soap to me. And I always been fascinated with Asian food. But it was in Australia where it's really developed because there were so many elements, so new things which I haven't seen in classical French culture. So when I arrived in Asia, I remember in KL, visiting the market was an eye-opener. It was crazy. You go really crazy. You would try all kind of things. The food back then for me in 97 was very much what we would call today a rojak. It was a little bit of Thai influence, a bit of Chinese influence, a bit of Malay influence. Everything was there, and then I used my French base, and it was what we used to call back then fusion. But it was also, as we say so often, very confusing because it was not a direct line. Today, 20 years after, I think we have evolved and refined towards more Japanese. In my case, I think there's an interest, a personal interest into Japanese food because there's a parallel with French food. I can develop that a little bit further, just explaining that we follow the same seasons. When it's mushroom season in France, it's mushroom season in Japan. The way we train chefs, a pastry chef wouldn't be doing deep frying, a hot chef doesn't do cold dishes. Similarly, I don't know, a teppan chef doesn't do sushi. It's similar. Respect of ingredients. You see that respect of ingredients and suppliers, but also the presentation. So it's two cultures, I think, where presentation is essential. So after visiting and after exploring, I've been in Asia and specifically Southeast Asia for 20 years. My food has went from a combination of kind of Japanese, Chinese, Malay influences towards more of a Japanese refinement. That's how I would put it. Mm. However, you still find some curries in my food.
Take a step back for a moment. So when you first came over to Singapore, Malaysia, were there any moments where you first encountered an ingredient that really blew your mind, or any particular dishes that you remember?
There must be many. Laksa would be probably the first one which come striking my mind. We had laksa in Australia, and when I arrived in Malaysia, I thought, okay, well, laksa, it's laksa. And it had nothing to do with what I had tasted before. Nasi lemak is another one. I remember I just arrived, it was maybe the first day or second day, and there was constructions around where I was staying. So I went down and I saw those guys eating some little pyramid of green, it looks like banana leaf. I didn't know what it was. I didn't even understood the value of the ringgit back then, so I had no idea how much it cost. And I remember sitting down with those workers and we were eating those nasi lemak, and it was like, wow, that's so simple. So seems to be so easy to do and so tasty. So that there's a lot of food. You know, when you first arrive in Malaysia and you know you're going to stay here for a while, you go and explore fishball kway teow, fried noodles, all kind of chicken wings, roasted barbecue chicken wings, the skate with the chili.
Like the, what's it called? Like a stingray.
Yeah, stingray. Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. Mm. So all kind of things. And going further, you realize, you know, you talk to people, because I was obviously in the restaurant business, and realize that family have a special way to do it. And no, that's not the right way. My other family has a better way to do it. And then so people were so fascinated, so interested into food, and it was really part of the culture. And that's something I really enjoyed in Malaysia when I first arrived, because it brings me back to my own roots. It's very much in my family. Food is very part of essential things. We would sit around the table and talk about food and recipes and ingredients for hours. I lost it a little bit on my traveling. And today that's something I really like to see back, because very often we eat with, you know, an iPad and iPhone in between the dishes. And if I have a message to pass, most of the time I say, please drop your electronic and start again talking about recipes. Start again talking about what you love to eat and how you cook it and exchange ideas. I love to see an argument between two people because my recipe is better, my way of doing things is better. I think it's exciting because it's so, you can get so passionate about food. And but who is right, who is wrong, it's always a matter of personal taste. That's it. We had big argument with, oh, my mum's curry is better. No, my mum's curry is better. And the interesting part is, I don't know which one was better, but we know that people at home cook with love because they cook for their loved one. And that may be the big thing to take out of those conversations. And when people are doing things with interest, with love, they're cooking for their sons, they're cooking for their husbands or wives, there is a love element going into the dishes. And I'm convinced we can test that element.
Mm, yeah, and just hearing you speak, there is a lot of passion and love coming through there. So
that's my life.
But right now it's time for a quick break. I've just been speaking to Chef Emmanuel Strubant from Saint Pierre Restaurant. When we return, we'll learn more about the evolution of his cooking and discuss what it was about Asia that drew Chef to this region of the world. Stay tuned. You're listening to Breaking Bread on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Breaking Bread. I'm Jun, and I've been speaking to Chef Emmanuel Strubant, the chef owner of Saint Pierre Restaurant in Singapore and most recently in KL2. So, Chef, in 2003, you wrote a cookbook called Cuisine Unplugged, Reinterpreting European Cuisine with an Asian Touch. I feel like a lot of your cooking tries to marry the two big sort of food cultures of the world, right? There's Europe and then there's Asia. But when you first came over here, do you feel that the Asian palate was very different from European palate, and how did you have to kind of wrestle with that?
It takes a while to understand South Asian culture, first of all, because it's from a European perspective. I would say that most of the time when I go to an Asian restaurant, you can have a place where you mix sushi, fried noodles, and nasi goreng, and everything falls under Asian element. So I started with that in mind, just Asia. A little bit like anybody would go to Europe and think Norwegian food is like Italian food. It's so much different. And then you go and you explore that and you think, oh, wow, you realize the northern part of Malaysia is different from the southern part. And then you go even deeper and you realize pretty much from kampong to kampong, things are different. So it really takes a while to to infuse yourself and understand. I'm a professional, so it's a little bit easier for me. I look at it from with a professional, with techniques, with component, trying to understand how it works. But at the beginning, it was very frankly difficult. I was very fortunate to live in an Asian family, because as soon as I got married, basically the whole family, my family became Asian. And well, that was part of a daily life from breakfast to supper. And that's, I think it was how I learned about it and how I explored it from an inside out rather than from an outsider coming and spend 2 weeks here of holiday and thinking, okay, I know everything about Malaysian food.
Mm. So in a sense, they were your kind of first point of feedback for the food you were cooking?
They were, and they still remain today. You know, when we cook at home, okay, sometimes we've got steaks and mushrooms, but very often, more often than Western food, we have Asian food. That's also something which we love to play. I can't recreate those dishes in the restaurant because I don't run an Asian restaurant. But on the other hand, I think on a personal basis, that's dishes which I really love to explore.
Mm. And I think one of the other ways that your cooking or your cuisine has changed is about 10 years ago, you turned vegetarian.
I turned vegetarian, right? That's right. Health issue, very heavy cholesterol, and I had no choice but drop the red meat, scallops, prawns, lobster, and all those good things.
Mm, and I'm sure that's like big news when you're like a rock star chef and suddenly from cooking, I guess, typical French cuisine where there's a lot of meat and European meat-heavy cuisines, then you suddenly turn vegetarian. How did the people around you take that?
And well, first I was a chef before being a vegetarian. So I still today, and for the past 10 years I've been vegetarian, I still taste my food. There's no choice there. It's important then to have an idea of what the taste is. It has developed something into me. I think I've acquired pure taste. I'm able to discern much more flavors, I think, today than 10 years ago. Well, it may be also due to the fact that I stopped smoking and drinking, but but definitely the vegetarian part is important. Then I start to focus and emphasize a bit more on the side dishes. You know, steak is a steak or a piece of fish is a piece of fish, but what can go with that and what kind of flavor profile would go? And you really start to think about, you don't have meat plus meat plus meat. Most of the time you have meat plus vegetables, eventually starch and sauces. So that's more the focus today for me. Meat, I make sure that my chefs are making extremely, we pick right ingredients, we use the right techniques. I will still taste. I do food testing pretty much once a week into all the restaurants. So it's not about not eating anymore any kind of meat. I will still taste, but I don't have to eat the whole steak to have an idea of the taste of the steak.
Mm. But since you personally are a vegetarian, do you feel that you would want to shift the focus of Sampia to a more veggie-forward, veggie-centric type of cooking?
There's always a few vegetarian dishes on the menu. The thing is, now we need to look at it from a business point of view. Mm-hmm. There's only a small fraction of the population today vegetarian, so opening a pure vegetarian restaurant, in my case, wouldn't make sense in terms of business. There's only, it's more about maybe 11% of the population vegetarian. So that's one of the reasons why I don't go too far there, but I always offer options. So I always have all kind of options for that. We could pretty much take the whole menu of Saint-Pierre, remove the animal protein and still have a perfectly balanced meal.
Mm. I think let's shift the conversation a bit to, I guess, we've talked about how you have these two parts, right? You have your classical French training and your Asian influences. And I think to a lot of the world, for the French and European cuisine still seems to be sort of put on a pedestal, like especially in Malaysia, you can charge higher if you're a French restaurant or European restaurant compared to, let's say, if you are a Malaysian restaurant serving jungle produce, although Japan is an exception.
Okay. It could be the exotic factor somehow, maybe. But I would say that we Europeans should really open our minds on understanding and learning a little bit more about the Asian techniques. There are techniques which are absolutely underrated in European cuisine. Yes, we deep fried stuff, like we deep fry fish and chips or stuff like this. But the way you will baste a fish or a chicken with oil, pouring hot oil on top of the skin to crisp it, this is something really interesting. And I've never seen that during my apprenticeship, during the classical days. It didn't exist. We use steamer here and there, but very underrated as well. We sometimes have a pot of water and a small net on top and we will steam a fish or a flan or something like that. But it's, again, We have to put it back in perspective. Today, we have new technologies. We've got steam oven, which are precise to a degree. And it is much used in today's European kitchen. But it's new. It's not something which we've always had. I don't think there's a Chinese restaurant without a steamer. Wok techniques also. What is the difference between wok and how it works with a direct impact of the flame on a very thin metal? So it's a very different way of cooking. I remember we opened a Chinese restaurant in Singapore a few years back, and I was looking at the chefs cooking into wok, and the way the techniques used there, it was amazing to use the same pan pretty much to cook fish, vegetables, rice, noodles, and everything was coming from the same the same container. It really blew my mind. So there's definitely things which need to be explored or understood from the European perspective.
And in your restaurant, are there examples of certain techniques that you've tried to implement?
We steam a lot because I think steaming gives... So it's very technical. When you put energy on a protein, it tends to make it very dense. So by applying steam, for instance, it's a much more mild way to bring the heat into an element. So if you steam a piece of fish, you don't have the protein... coming, like, you know,
like tightening
exactly, and you have a result which is much nicer. Sometimes you want that tightening thing, you want to pan sear it, but then you could pan sear and steam. So you can combine techniques of steam first and then pan fry or baste with oil to have that crispiness around it. We use a lot of Asian techniques and a lot of Asian elements. You know, from the Japanese side, if you think of it also, miso, dashi are all kind of very simple elements coming in, and it brings so much taste. That umami kind of flavor which comes from those simple, very simple ingredients is quite interesting. So when you can understand it, technically speaking, and combine them with sense, with an open mind on thinking, oh, my background's the best, you know. Just thinking, okay, well, that's very interesting. What can I get from there? Then you get really a larger horizon of possibilities into cooking.
And then how about for us Asians? What advice do you have for us to, I guess, maybe appreciate our food and technique a bit more?
I would use the word self-confidence. I've got young chefs working with me, and sometimes they lack a little bit of self-confidence because it's always been looked down, Malaysian techniques. I'm not talking about ingredients or food, but, you know, it's just like, okay, Asian food is cheap stuff opposed to French classical. Where you
yeah, that's the thing, like so, the value of it.
And I think it's something which we should be very proud of. I see today a very young Malaysian chef doing extremely well in places like New York and places like, and it's great. I think it needs to be, we are completely underrated. So it's for us a way we need to go overseas. I think that's the first thing. It's, you know, how do we say in French, they say nobody is a star in his own country. It's important for those young chefs, talented young chefs here in Malaysia to go out, go to Europe, go to America, go to Australia, and make your cuisine known. You will need to adapt it. I mean, not everybody can take chili paddy, clearly. But it doesn't matter. There's ways to bring your mildness into the cuisine, and it's just a matter of daring to do it and opening. I would say something a bit shocking, but we are the first Asians, I consider myself somehow Asian, we are the first one to be blamed. We don't dare to go out and claim, hey, you know, we can do this, we can do that. The Japanese has done it. They've done it because they're renowned for the ingredients, they're renowned for their techniques. What stops us to do it? We've got stuff to offer to the world, so let's do it, let's show it.
And as for you personally, what do you have any future plans for the next few years to sort of show off this Asian flavor, Asian cuisine?
I don't know. It comes organically. Most of the time, I would say, in terms of if I talk strictly business, my wife is the mind behind pretty much everything we do. So she's the one directing us and telling us what's going to be the next step. I'm more the technician behind. So she's the one having the visions of what could be. We're thinking business, opening new restaurants, talking about TV, stuff like this. She's the one deciding. She's the one driving us. And I'm most of the time behind and following and saying, okay, well, here we need a yellow wall in terms of design, or we need to put a wok there because we will need to deep fry some stuff. The plans, I don't know. There's always plans, there's always new things coming up, but most of the time it comes organically. When we are ready and an opportunity coming our way, I'm always happy to jump on it.
Mm, cool. And in the short term, I heard that there are a few special menus coming out at Saint-Pierre KL in W Hotel.
Saint-Pierre KL is still a baby. It's only 1 year old. We've got an amazing local chef now taking over the stove. And he's an extremely good technician. We're talking about techniques. That guy is quite amazing.
He's from Penang, right?
He's from Penang, yes. It's super cool. And so what we do with him, he creates dishes. I come to Malaysia. I taste the dishes. We rectify a little bit here and there if need to be, and then he runs. So we came out for Christmas and New Year. I asked him to work on classical European concepts. You know what we do? We eat oysters. We would eat foie gras. We eat gamey kind of things. So he came out with local stuff. He came out with, you know, he did a stunning crab dish. He did an oyster dish. We haven't tasted yesterday, but it's because the oysters are not in season for us yet. And he worked with gamey stuff, like he used venison and he used local flavor to enhance the venison's flavor. He's very good at what he does. So
oh yeah, I saw that venison excited. With sambal hijau.
Yeah,
that was his idea as well.
That's his idea.
Oh, cool.
That's his idea. So the sambal really lift, and it's not a super strong sambal with a balachan behind. So it's not kind of, it's not overwhelming. So he still balances. He uses green chili and figs. So you know how that kind of dishes need to be balanced, like a little bit of what we call sweet and sour flavors to go with it, and that's what he balanced it with. So the sweet and sourness are coming basically from the sambal and from the figs together.
Mm, and these menus will be out on December. Christmas, yeah, December, right. Christmas, New Year's. So go and check it out. Thank you so much, Chef, for
Thanks
coming.
It's a real pleasure being here. Thank you so much.
That's all we have for this week's show. To listen to more episodes, find us on iTunes, Spotify, or visit our website at www.bfm.my. And if you're hungry for recipes to try out this weekend or want to read some funky food writing, you can find those on my blog at junandtonic.com. That's junandtonic.com. I'm Jun, and you've been listening to Breaking Bread on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.